I'm Faith Middleton. It's great to have you joining the party on the Food Schmooze here on WNPR in Connecticut, Rhode Island, Massachusetts, and New York, including the East End of Long Island. My food buddies are here, producers Lori Mack and Jonathan McNichol, Chris Prosperi of Metro Beast Restaurant in Simsbury, Connecticut, and Alex Provence, who works for Eater and Goodman Wine Distributors in Connecticut and New York. Hey, everybody.
Hey.
You can tell your friends, no matter where they live, they can listen to the Food Schmooze from anywhere in the world, as many people do, at WNPR.org. So much to talk about on the show that's going to be great. The first thing is, though, this is one of the best names for a bakery ever. This is in Providence, Rhode Island, and the bakery is called Sin.
Lori, chime in.
Yeah. I could say so much about that. I think that is a fabulous name for a bakery.
And if they had branches, it could be Mortal Sin.
That's right.
Sin. There could be a third one called Limbo.
That's great.
And what is
only
Limbo?
Catholics are going to get that show.
And Limbo is the desserts that aren't really
bad. That's
for
what
you. Kind of bad for you.
Maybe not so much sugar, but maybe there is. You know this feeling of when you're driving down the highway, thinking about all kinds of things. Talk about when we tell ourselves stories. And I've been thinking as I drive along, Alex, about what to make for Thanksgiving. You know, I cruise through all kinds of things. Maybe for a side dish, I'll do this. Maybe I should make the turkey this way. So in a couple weeks or so, we're going to be giving you all the details about flavor profiles, sides, and interesting ways to make the turkey. But we thought we'd get you rolling on this, start to prime the pump a little bit. Is anybody thinking
Never
about this
too
at all?
Early.
I'm always thinking. I love Thanksgiving. It's one of my very favorite holidays.
What are you thinking? You thinking about desserts or what?
Of course I am. I am thinking about that Marlboro pie that we talked with Amy Traverso about from Yankee Magazine. The book was Lost in Vintage Recipes, and she talks about this Marlboro pie, which has apples and some sort of custard. I have been daydreaming
about
this.
Was there bourbon or whiskey or something in there?
Do I remember? Probably, but I made sure I copied it.
There is now. I think Faith's thinking cocktails.
So you're thinking, I am thinking cocktails.
I'm
so
thinking,
dessert. Okay.
I'm thinking where to put bacon.
Okay.
Are you?
Yes.
Are you
thinking this year actually putting bacon. You know how some people put
Bacon fat or bacon itself?
Just put bacon itself under the skin. You know how people put butter?
Truffles.
Yeah, truffles. I was thinking maybe just do bacon in under the skin and then bacon in the cavity and then a couple strips of bacon in the roasting pan.
That's
great. Boy, that sounds really good.
I think
good.
That really sounds good. I think
me too.
Turkey meat. And bacon would do well together.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
So that's where I'm going.
All right. Alex, are you doing
well,
any?
So every year I want to order a turkey, like an heirloom varietal, and I think I would wait too long, so it's the week before Thanksgiving, and then
you have to order it like
and
now.
Plus they're around $100 each, which is pretty pricey for about a 15, 16-pound turkey.
Do you think they're better?
You know, maybe not enough for $100, although it's been so long since I've had one, I could be wrong, so I don't even want to say.
We did the taste test on the show one time. The results were a little mixed.
I think that's the results are exactly what Faith is saying. It's good. It's a little better, but was it, I mean, I don't remember the price spread. The price spread was pretty big between the two turkeys.
Now I feel terrible that all these family farms that are doing heritage turkeys, we've just heard them tremendously. Terrible.
No, because it is a little better. It is.
You know what was delicious? The wild turkey. That man brought in, our Food Schmooze listener from the Department of Environmental Protection. He's a bow and arrow hunter, and he brought a wild turkey and cooked it and brought it in, and it was remarkably delicious.
Yeah. Yes.
Although he marinated the meat in a kind of Italian herby spicy thing before he cooked it.
I had left
totally
that part out.
But totally different, right? Doesn't even resemble what we're used to as turkey now.
Well, that's true.
Right?
Yeah.
It's
a
totally different animal because we have – my parents live in Goshen, and we have a lot of friends that hunt turkeys, and they bring us turkeys. And when we eat it, you're just like – you're eating more like a cross between a duck and some wild bird, I guess, is a good way to describe it.
Yeah. So, all right. We know we've got you started thinking a little bit about the fun of what you're going to make for Thanksgiving. And even if you're invited to somebody else's house, when you come home, I promise you, you're going to want something that's special. Or you might want to give the gift of something that you made when you arrive at somebody else's house. Or you don't like what your family makes.
I know a lot of people like that.
You want to improve the table. So don't admit that, but that's what, that could be going on. All right, well, I have one thing to get you in the mood. This is a drink I love to serve, and it's my Thanksgiving Cosmo Sparkler. Mm. You know me, I love easy, delicious cocktails. So this is what I consider a festive seasonal sparkler to get your Thanksgiving rolling. And what you're going to do with this, and by the way, this is online. The exact recipe is online. I'll give you that address in a second. You pair together cranberry juice, vodka, and champagne, and your guests will be having too much fun to notice that the turkey is still frozen.
I was going to say, that'll make everything taste better.
So you serve these drinks in chilled martini glasses, because there's nothing more festive than holding a martini glass. I don't know why that is. I will put soda, milk, hot chocolate, anything in a martini glass.
Or can you see Faith's bedside with the martini glass filled with warm milk before she goes to sleep?
Very nice.
Cheers. Yeah. All right. So all you do is run your glasses, your martini glasses, underwater, because I'm asking you to do them chilled. Just run them under the faucet. Then pop them in the freezer for an hour or two before your guests come. And you're going to pull out each one as you pour from your cocktail pitcher. And then you leave a little room so that you top off each glass with a splash of champagne or your favorite sparkling wine. I'm thinking of a dry sparkler, like a Spanish cava. They all have different names, but no matter where it's from, you want it to be dry, not fruity. Okay, the ingredients and instructions are at our website, WNPR.org. I'm going to tell you now what's in this thing, WNPR.org, and you just click on programs when you get to the site for the Faith Middleton Show. Here are the ingredients: lemon-flavored vodka of your choice, a little bit of orange-flavored liqueur, Cointreau, Grand Marnier, Triple Sec, they have different names, a little unsweetened cranberry juice. Some people like it sweetened, but I'm saying for this case, unsweetened, a little bit of Rose's lime juice, or if you prefer, a quick squeeze of fresh lime juice, and a couple of ounces of champagne or your favorite dry sparkler. That means it's not made in Champagne, France. And some fresh cranberries. And so you put the martini glasses, a little bit wet, in the freezer a couple hours. In a pitcher, you mix together lots of ice and all the ingredients I just talked about, except for the sparkling wine and the fresh cranberries. You stir that up well so that it's fiercely chilled. And then as you're pouring it for people, you remove the chilled martini glasses one at a time from the freezer, and you fill each glass, no ice, try not to, leaving room to top off each drink with about 2 ounces of the champagne or sparkling wine. And then you just pop a fresh cranberry into every glass. Okay, that simple, and it is so good.
Happy
and of course, you're putting in a little bit of Rose's lime juice. Or,
that's your secret ingredient.
You know what the deal? Here's the deal with an easy cocktail. This is why we do them in the simple way, Alex. And I know you love a good cocktail too. All you have to do is make one ahead of time and taste it. And if you think, you know what, that's a little sweet, so maybe too much Rose's lime juice, or you might say that's too tart. I use unsweetened cranberry juice. I'm going to use sweetened cranberry juice. Or I'm going to add more Rose's lime juice. You can make this up in your head to make it the profile you want. It's not hard. It's easy. So don't worry about this. Just experiment a little and have fun. And then you've tried one before your guests arrive, and you're good to go.
That's the most important part.
Yeah,
having
right.
one
the
before night your off. Guests arrive.
So we're going to get you in a couple weeks or so. We're going to be doing our real Thanksgiving show and giving you all the details about flavor profiles, dishes to make. We're going to brainstorm with you, give you all kinds of instructions. So stick with us for that. So that's my Thanksgiving Cosmo Sparkler. And you can find the instructions delicious. On our website at WNPR.org, WNPR.org. You just click on the program bar and you'll see the Faith Middleton Show and you're all good to go. All right. I saw this in a recent New York Times. You know how everybody's into zombies. Does anybody have any friends? Or maybe
there's
somebody
or kids? Zombies.
I thought zombies were dead by now.
They are. They
someone
are.
In the room had to say it. Thank you, Alex.
A lot of my friends are into this zombie thing.
Walking Dead?
Yeah. I mean, and I asked them, I say, you know, because I'm not particularly interested in zombies, but,
why not?
I don't know. It just doesn't grab me. You know,
the
I mean,
Geico commercial
vampires,
rocks,
okay.
Though, right?
Zombies, I don't really know.
Yes.
But this was so interesting from the New York Times, a Florence Fabricant, where they're doing the New York Mycological Society. These are the mushroom hunters, are doing a group. They're taking out a group of amateur foragers. And where are they taking them? Woodlawn Cemetery in the Bronx. And they're going to look for hen of the woods mushrooms. They're going to be looking for blewett and other delicacies. And they're going to be trying to avoid, says Florence, the toxic amanitas. So all of a sudden I read that line about toxic amanitas and the zombies flew into my head. I thought, seriously, mushroom hunting at the cemetery.
Florence Fabricant.
Are they doing this in the daytime?
Wait a minute. I want to know if mushrooms really grow in cemeteries.
Sure they do. Why would the New York
totally going to start hunting through cemeteries pretending I'll go with a thing of flowers, right?
And your basket.
Yeah, my basket looking around the corner.
I can hear him going, excuse me. All right, we're going to get to some interesting things. I've got information about a new donut in New York City if you're going there. So that's always exciting. Let's start with either emails. Yes, Alex, you got something?
Okay, Faith, I've got something from Lydia Rudolph. So it looks like it's make your own blintzes.
Ooh.
And she says a favorite of hers is to add caramelized onions and lots of black peppers to mashed potatoes. She places a tablespoon on a crepe and then folds it into a blintz.
Ooh. Oh, so you make your own crepe. We've talked about that on the show. You can Google that and get any recipe.
Whatever you
so
want
easy. Yeah, depending how fancy you are. And then mashed potatoes, caramelized
onions.
Sounds
delicious.
Yeah.
And then she puts it into an oven-proof glass pan, dots some butter on it. And she says at this stage you can freeze it for later baking, or you can just put it into a 350-degree oven and bake it until it's golden.
That's a Thanksgiving, isn't it?
Your own blintzes. How great is this?
And she says it's wonderful with chicken, and she adds a dollop of sour cream. It's yummy. And this is from Lydia Rudolph.
Our Food Schmoes listener. Lydia, thank you so much.
That's a good one.
That's a Thanksgiving one. Put little bits of bacon in there.
So
I'd like to make a dessert blintz, please.
Incredibly inspiring.
Whoa!
See? That got Faith's approval.
I didn't mean to do that. although I am going to talk about the donut. Kovi Cora, who's a chef in New York, has been working in East Harlem and has a new donut. Boy, I guess he's nailed it. New York Times says puffy yeast rays, colorfully glazed with uncommon flavors like pineapple brown butter, maple miso, and blueberry rosemary. This is called Dough Loco. I love that name. So that's Dough Loco, D-O-U-G-H, loco.com.
Donut field trip. That's what I'm thinking.
So many field trips. I'm Faith Middleton. I hope you'll make a charitable contribution to feed the hungry, more mouth-watering conversation and fun here on the Food Schmooze. We'll be right back.
Popsicle toes are always froze. Popsicle toes. You're so brave to expose all those popsicle toes.
Beans and cornbread. Beans and cornbread. Beans and cornbread.
Beans and cornbread had a fight. Beans knocked cornbread out of sight.
Beans.
Cornbread said, now that's all right.
Beans.
Meet me on the corner tomorrow night.
I'll be ready. I'll be ready tomorrow night.
I'm Faith Middleton. The Food Schmooze Party here on WNPR is heard Wednesdays at 3 and 9 p.m., Saturdays at noon. Join the conversation with us on Facebook. Simply search The Faith Middleton Show. Thanks to our talented crew, senior contributor Chris Prosperi of Metro Beast Restaurant in Simsbury, Connecticut, Eugene Amatruda, Marion Roy, senior producer Lori Mack, and producer Jonathan McNichol. We thank you first and foremost for listening. Our special guest is Alex Provins, who is with Eater Beer and Goodman Wine Distributors in Connecticut and New York. Alex, it's great to have you here. In just a couple of minutes, I want to talk about this wine that we have found together that's a wonderful white and a great value at under $15 a bottle from France. And I will just tell you this. It went so well with the crispy tortilla garlic soup,
oh,
didn't
it? Oh, it definitely did.
We're going to give you that recipe on our website.
Was that planned? That was really good.
Psychic.
It was a psychic wine beer.
It was planned. Okay. All right. At least that's the story we're telling. I have an email, too, and we had talked on the show a while ago about oatmeal and slow cookers, Chris. Mm-hmm. And so we heard from Cheryl Chappis, who says that she does an easy oatmeal, and it's a good value, too, and here's why. She says, I buy oat groats from the bulk bin at Whole Foods. Very you could do cool. this at your health food store, mm. and it cost her roughly $1.60 a pound.
That's
quite a savings on a McCann oatmeal, let's say. I measure out my oat groats before bed. I add to that, in a slow cooker, I add to that 5 times as much water, and I turn the slow cooker on low. That's it. All done. I know Chris loves his crock pots.
Love them.
So she says, for two of us, I use a half a cup of groats and a 1.5 quart cooker. But if she's doing the oatmeal for 4 people, she'd need a regular size crock. So she says it's also possible to do a macrobiotic touch. You drop 1-inch piece of kombu on top Ooh. Before cooking to add minerals, and then you scoop it out before you serve it. Have a great day, Cheryl Chappis. Okay, what is kombu?
Thank
Seaweed.
You.
Does anybody
Seaweed.
Know? It's what?
Seaweed, kelp.
Oh,
you can get it at the health food okay. stores or Asian markets.
Oh, well, Cheryl,
and
thank you so much.
It does add great minerals and flavor.
To your oatmeal. Okay.
To anything.
Interesting. Never thought that.
Really interesting.
I've well, never
would
thought
you put
oatmeal.
That in? What do you put kombu in?
Number one thing they use
our
it for
garlic
is,
soup?
No, is, well, yeah, our garlic soup would have been a good one, but the number one thing, it's the stock in miso soup. Yep.
Okay.
They simmer kelp or kombu, and then they pull it out and flavor it with fish flakes. And that's
no
the,
kidding, and that's
yeah,
what
that's
makes
dashi
miso.
Stock.
No.
That's dashi
oh, that's
stock,
so
and that's
interesting,
what's in
Chris.
Miso soup.
Yeah. All right, we're going to go to our recipe and get to the cookbook that we featured and the wine, but a quick conversation about this. In a recent New York Times, Jeff Gordner did a story on a food conference that was held in Westchester County not long ago, and where all the great chefs, I'm talking about Ferran Adria of El Bulli, all kinds of amazing people all gathered in Pocantico Hills to discuss a question that Dan Barber had posed from Stone Barns. He had gone online and said to the luminaries of the food world, what if we were involved in writing a food recipe from the very beginning? And by that he means we saw recently that Ariana Duggan from D'Artagnan mm-hmm. Food products, mm. has been raising special chickens, feeding them, working with a farmer and feeding them special things. She's working hand in glove with the farmer, feeding them very, very special things, you know, from their kitchen at D'Artagnan. So they're eating beautiful leftovers.
Wow.
Now they're starting to taste the chickens, and they're supposedly unbelievable.
Wow.
So the 3- and 4-star restaurants in New York are trying to get their hands on them.
Okay,
that's number one. So I thought that must be what they're talking about from the very beginning. No, Dan Barber is raising the idea of seeds. He's saying, why can't we work with our farmers when it comes to fruits and vegetables about seed stock? So this got everybody intrigued and interested. Now, there's a fascinating conversation to be had here about whether putting heirloom seeds or seeds from another country that they use all the time there, whether that's going to give you something that tastes like an artichoke from Italy.
Oh, wow.
Is that going to happen?
That would be
Ooh,
really
I would love to know the results.
Well, I'll tell you this. I've had some experience with this. Mm-hmm. I went to the Green Market in New York City,
yeah.
Union Square
sure,
Green
sure.
Market. There was a man selling seeds that he had harvested mm-hmm. from his family's gardens in Italy. Of course, I bought them. I brought them here, planted them. I was so excited because there's nothing like fruit and vegetables in Italy. Did it taste anything like what I had in Italy? No.
Mm-hmm.
And I kept asking people, why is this? Why would that be so? And they said to me, it's a total climate experience. There's water, soil, and air.
Yeah.
And all these elements come together to kind of infuse the seed, be part of the seed's nature. And the sun, you know, there's a certain length of warmth, intensity of warmth, and that has everything to do with it. So I don't know. This is interesting.
I also think that there's a sense of place, too. Even if, and this is what I don't understand, if you took that tomato or that artichoke and you brought it to your apartment in New York and you opened your windows and you hear the cabs running and all that stuff and you ate the artichokes there and you're in New York and you taste it and then you think about when you had it sitting in Provence or sitting in, you know, Tuscany and the views and the smells and all that's going on in your head too. What does that bring to our food?
Chris, that's a great point, and I think it brings something to the food. When you're reviewing a restaurant, you hear from people who are upset if you don't like a place because they've had wonderful memories there. They have had celebrated anniversaries and birthdays in a place. And so if you say something bad about the restaurant, it hurts their feelings. Yes. However, that aside, I'm not kidding. When I've led food and wine tours through Europe and have eaten these things, I know when I taste an artichoke or, you know, piece of asparagus, our heads are swiveling saying, what in the world did they do to this? This isn't like anything I've ever had before. And so while I agree with you, Chris, there's something else going on.
A combination of all those things. I still say some of the best meals I've had in my life, and this is about the taste of the food, had more to do with the people I was eating with and the good time I was having.
Yeah.
And just that feeling of I'm with people that love me and I love, and all of a sudden the food really does take on this separate life and it tastes better for some reason.
What about this though? I'm in the farmer's market with a group of people and I'm in Seattle. I grab a peach and the man who is a local tour leader says to me, oh, that's not very good. We're going to take you to a place that makes extraordinary peaches. And so I've already had negative input. I bit into this peach and I thought I was going to faint dead away. It was climate, length of sun, water, soil, air, even in another part of the country.
All of that stuff puts together, and I think that's what makes it.
All right, we're going to do a cookbook thing in just a couple of minutes, but I wanted to get to our wine because we're next going to talk about a garlic tortilla soup from our featured cookbook. And this wine went so well with it. If you are looking for a house white wine, a house table wine, this is the one for you. And it is around $13, $14. Alex, we both know this as Bichot Mecon. We'll spell it for people in just a minute. But tell me what you like about this.
So
this is all Chardonnay, by the way.
All Chardonnay. So I love white Burgundy. And I love garlic. I love butter. And these... Who doesn't? Bacon. And these kinds of wines are just crisp and clean, and they cut through the fat, and they just pair beautifully with that style of cooking.
And can we say that Alex and I like this because this is not your oaky-oaky or
crisp,
super buttery.
I was just going to say that. It's not what you would standardly think of as an oaky Chardonnay at all.
Has just a faint amount of barrel. It's primarily stainless steel, and it's clean. It's zippy. It's crisp.
Yeah. So let's talk for a second about what you mean when you say a faint amount of barrel. Wine can go into, when they're making the recipe at the winemakers, it can go into stainless steel casks. It can go into oak barrels from different countries. They can go into oak barrels that have been charred by a fire. All these things change the wine in some way.
Some of the barrels are brand new and smell just so potently of lumber, and some are neutral. So this is stainless steel. And then they put just a bit of it in a neutral barrel, so a barrel that's been used that doesn't impart much oak flavor at all. But it allows the wine to oxidate slightly and become a little creamier and richer. So you get the richness, but you don't get that buttery sort of barrely smell.
And so Albert Bichot, we're going to tell you, and this is at our website. We'll give you that address in a second. Albert Bichot is the winemaker. The full name is Mecon Village. You just have to say what we're going to tell you to say. You might find this on the wine shelf at your store, and if you don't, they'll have it to you within 24 hours. We're going to tell you exactly what to say, and if you can't remember and you can't write it down, it's at our website. So this is the winemaker Bichot, B-I-C-H-O-T. Some people might say Bichot, but it's Bichot. This happens to be 2011. you ask for the Macon, M-A-C-O-N. It looks like Macon, M-A-C-O-N. So Bichot's Macon. It's a white Burgundy, $13 to $14. You cannot beat that price for a white Burgundy. And at your wine store, if they do not have it, you just say to them the name of the wine and the name of the distributor, and they will get it. They know where to look it up in a book then. The distributor is Eder and Goodman, E-D-E-R and Goodman, in Connecticut. If you're in New York, you use the letters BNP, Bravo Nancy Peter.
Sounds official.
That's from his cop days.
I'm on the boat.
Alex, let's do some food pairing. So it went great with the garlic tortilla soup we're about to talk about. So delicious.
You know, sailing on the weekends, I see everyone catching stripers, so striped bass. Mm. And I always wonder what they do with it. So incidentally, this is a wine that would go great with stripers for people that are catching them this weekend.
What time's dinner?
What's that? Yeah.
Well, are we talking
sailboats are harder
or
to fish
Sunday?
Off.
Yes, they are.
Power boat. But and then the other cool thing I thought was, aren't the Nantucket Bay scallops coming into season?
Yes, they are.
And like a beautifully seared scallop in a pan with butter would go beautifully well.
Yeah, how about, and shellfish, I think.
Shellfish, yeah. Oysters.
Yeah, oysters and lobster. Oysters. I would have this with lobster. I know lobster usually takes a more buttery wine, but sometimes it, because you're dipping lobster meat in butter, it's all a little over the top for me, and I don't want such a rich wine, and so I want something crisp.
This will clean your palate, right? Sort of wash the butter away and make it refreshing. And
baked stuffed clams.
Lobster
clams
rolls.
Casino.
Here's a weird one. What about chocolate?
I was going to ask you if you could do it, but I was more joking because I am the sweet tooth person here. But I'm so excited to hear you
sort
say
of a,
this.
A pairing that people say is chocolate with Macon Village. I haven't tried
Where's
it.
Where's the chocolate? Or Jonathan, do you got some in the drawer there?
Mac probably does.
So they were saying fruits and chocolate together. So I think I guess we'd have to experiment.
Okay.
Both.
You I think so,
where do
too.
I sign?
Yeah, that's right. Yes.
Is that this Sunday after you catch those stripers and invite us to dinner?
Then we experiment with
stripers, lobster, scallops.
If you see a sailboat
with people running behind it.
Pulled across the sound. I've got one on the line. Oh, it's a bluefish. Mm. I'm going 30 miles an hour. All right, as we get to our vegetarian cookbook, our listing of vegetarian restaurants, ideas for getting more vegetables on the plate in interesting ways, it's time for our cookbook roundup.
Yeehaw!
We're going to start with Cooking Slow. Andrew Schloss was on our show last week, S-C-H-L-O-S-S. Cooking Slow has some great recipes. It's recipes for slowing down and cooking more. Lori Mack.
I have Flour 2, T-O-O. This is by Joanne Chang, inspired by her four cafes in Boston. Recipes include Flour's famous egg sandwich, Mama Chang's hot and sour soup, Applewood smoked BLTs, mushroom and leek lasagna with creamy bechamel, cantaloupe mint seltzer, and my favorite, triple chocolate mousse cake.
My
Chris Prosperi.
All right, I've got one which is a little different than a normal cookbook. It's Notes from the Larder by Nigel Slater, who's a great food journalist in London. And I like this book because he's really – what he's done is taken recipes that he's made on a daily basis. So he's not sat down and said, I need 200 recipes I'm going to come up with. These were recipes as he made over the years. And he goes, that's a good one. I'm going to write that down. So these are recipes that he served his friends and family. And there's things
and
like –
And he tells stories.
Yeah, and he tells stories about when he served them and how he served them. So there's like quince baking on a winter's day, steak tossed with chili sauce and Chinese green, little crab cakes and cilantro to eat with friends right out of the frying pan. And he also gives a little shout out to all his favorite kitchen equipment and gadgets. And it's called Notes from the Larder by Nigel Slater.
And it's a beautiful book, too. It's really
I love the stain marks on the cover. It looks like it came from my kitchen.
All right. The Scarpetta Cookbook is out. This is by award-winning chef and restaurateur Scott Conant. Italian cuisine, as usual. You're going to find short ribs with farro and vegetable risotto, black farfalle with lobster, a Sicilian spiced duck breast with preserved orange. Sounds so good to me. And scarpetta, spaghetti, and tomato sauce, a famous dish at Scott Conant's restaurants. The Scarpetta cookbook is now out. Alex Provins.
So here's one. It's the Model Bakery Cookbook.
Yay.
So it's and the diet goes away. So it's 75 favorite recipes from this Napa Valley bakery. It's was written by Karen Mitchell and Sarah Mitchell Hansen. Looks like there's some cool English muffin recipes, panna levan, fruit tartlets, classic chocolate chip cookies, my
favorite.
Saw that
recipe, and it looked really good.
I'm hungry. So cream currant scones, and here's one for Thanksgiving, brandy pumpkin pie.
Oh, yeah.
Right
there
there
almond
macaroons.
There you go, rival my Marlboro.
Now almond you need macaron. Two.
So it was the Model Bakery Cookbook by Karen Mitchell and Sarah Mitchell Hansen.
Thank Very you, cool. Alex Provins. Mm-hmm. Okay. And here's a message from Laura Blackwell in Newport, Rhode Island. She says, with the help of about 15 Rhode Island or Rhodie fishermen, she wrote the Fisherman's Table Cookbook, a handbook to cooking Rhode Island seafood from lobster to crab to conch to finfish. I packed it with salty tips from the experts, the fishermen themselves. That was a smart thing to do. Thank you, Laura Blackwell. She is the author in Newport, Rhode Island. It's called The Fisherman's Table. Jonathan McNichol.
I love this title. It's Nosh on This. Gluten-free baking from a Jewish American kitchen. It's deceptively gluten-free versions of Jewish American classics from chocolate babka to hamantaschen and jelly donuts and sweet potato kugel.
Oh, how smart. Gluten Jewish food. I love
donuts.
That idea.
Not that Faith had us on donuts earlier.
All right. We've got some great vegetarian food coming your way. Or if you just want to get more vegetables on the plate, including a garlic crispy tortilla soup, please support your local food growers and food makers. Find the food, wine, recipes, and cocktails we feature anytime online at WNPR.org. Click on Programs for the Faith Middleton Show. More delicious conversation after a quick break. Please stay with us. Faith Middleton with the gang, and this is the Food Schmooze Party coming to you in Connecticut, Rhode Island, Massachusetts, and New York, including the East End of Long Island. You can tweet us at FaithWNPR. And to join the conversation with us on Facebook, search The Faith Middleton Show, because who can spell schmooze? S-C-H-M-O-O-Z-E. All right, we're going to go to a vegetable-centric cookbook called Fresh Food Fast in just a minute. That made me last night go online to see what I would come up with if I Googled a Connecticut and New York vegetarian restaurants. They're all over the place. And what an explosion there has been. Vegetarian, and for those who don't even eat dairy, we have vegan restaurants. We now have restaurants that serve meat, but try to have on the main menu a true, wonderful vegetarian dish.
Yes.
Not just that you have to hunt and have rice.
And sides.
Right.
You know, yeah. Sides and stuff like that. So
or
people
pasta.
Are really, you know, capitalizing on that. People who want a more vegetable-based diet are happy, and so this is great. So here's what happened before we go to our cookbook when I Googled vegetarian restaurants. Across our region, some that come to mind from my cruising last night, all you have to do is Google it too, vegetarian restaurants in the state you're in, Connecticut, New York, Rhode Island, Massachusetts.
There's a couple popping up in my head.
Oh, yeah? So see if I hit yours.
Okay.
In Connecticut, in Branford, G. Zen.
Yeah, that'd be one.
Initial G-Z-E-N. 6 Main in Chester, Connecticut. In Bridgeport, the long time, it's probably the oldest one, Bloodroot.
Mm. Ooh, that I don't know.
In Danbury, Connecticut, Hannas, H-A-N-N-A-S. Ooh. in Durham, Connecticut, the vegetarian food truck called G-Monkey Mobile.
That's the G-Zen one. Those guys rock.
In Fairfield, Connecticut, Catch a Healthy Habit Cafe. In Hartford, Fire and Spice Vegan. So for people who don't even eat dairy, there you go, vegan folks. In Mystic, there's Kate's. And in Middletown, this is a great one. If you love Indian flavors, which I do, there's a vegetarian Indian restaurant in Middletown called Udupi Bhavan. U-D-U-P-I-B-H-A-V-A-N. Udupi Bhavan.
That's one of my favorite ones.
Crucifying that name, but I'm trying my best. And in New Haven, probably the most famous of all, because how long has Claire Criscolo been around?
A long time.
Such a long time. Claire Criscolo. She has a vegetarian restaurant called Claire's, and it feels like centuries of that. Sorry, Claire. Centuries of Yale graduates have gone there, and lots of other colleges, too, from around the greater New Haven area. All right, here's what we're doing now. Whatever you're doing, if you are a full vegetarian, or you're someone who wants to just simply get more vegetables onto your table and have fun eating them, here is a cookbook that you might like to know about. It's called Fresh Food Fast. It is, of course, vegetable-based. Melissa Clark had a hand in this. I love her. She is the New York Times food columnist and recipe creator. The author, the creator of this book, is Peter Burley, B-E-R-L-E-Y. And Peter, welcome to the Food Schmooze Party. It's great to have you on the show.
Thank you very much for having me, Faith. You know, I just got introduced to you recently when I moved to the North Fork. I pick you up, your signal up loud and clear there. And I listen to the Food Schmooze all the time.
Oh, great. Peter, where are you on the North Fork?
I'm in beautiful South Jamesport on the bay.
Oh, that's beautiful there.
So I can walk down to the bay and go clamming. Not that that's vegetarian per se, but and I have
we've outed him. Oh, you have a what garden?
I have a huge raised bed garden, and so I've become more of a gardener than a chef. That's the way I consider myself, and a baker. I have a wood fired oven in my kitchen where I teach workshops there. I teach workshops in pickling and gardening and bread baking, or sourdough bread baking.
Peter, let me ask you a question. Do you think the North Fork of Long Island has two forks? The South Fork, everybody knows because of the, famous Hamptons. The North Fork, running parallel along it, is what you come to first if you're coming from Connecticut. And when you're driving through there, you would swear that it looks so much like early Sonoma County in California. Vineyards and farmland. It's gorgeous. Do you see it that way?
Oh, yeah. I love it. I mean, I get on my bicycle and I ride 3 miles to Tecluid Farm, where they have 10 cows, and they're on pasture all the time. You know, they live outside except in the winter. So this is completely grass-fed, grass-finished, and they milk twice a day. Their milk is raw, unpasteurized, unhomogenized, incredible. And that's where I get all my milk from, and I make my cheese from that. So, yeah, I mean, you can't get that. Where can you get that in New York?
Well, New York State, maybe.
Way upstate. This is shooting distance from Manhattan, from Brooklyn.
Yeah.
An hour and a half.
It's true. All right, let's talk about your book, Fresh Food Fast. The idea was to have it be seasonal and vegetarian and meals in under an hour. We just tried your garlic soup with crispy tortillas, avocado, and lime. Now, since we have some meat eaters here, we happen to add some chicken breast, but that's not how this recipe, chicken thighs, that's not how this recipe is designed.
So, no, because the umami base for this soup is the miso.
Yeah, that's your stealth ingredient. Let me just run down. So a head of fresh garlic, some chopped fresh cilantro, a little canola oil or grapeseed, some corn tortillas that you cut in strips, ripe avocado that you slice up, some fresh lime, broccoli florets, carrot, jalapeno pepper sliced, and white miso, which you can get in any health food store, but also sometimes in supermarkets. And this comes together. Chris, how easy was this for you to put together?
I was shocked how easy it was and the flavor that came out of it. It's a cheater's way to make stock. And it's amazing. It's just boiling water. And then you add some miso to it. And then all of a sudden, you get this amazing broth.
If you wanted a vegetarian bouillon or a vegetarian stock, instead of buying it, make this.
This is much better than any vegetable broth I've ever had.
You would never find a can or a packaged version that would be as good as this.
No.
Really good job.
This is what I've come to in cooking for 35, 40 years now. The function of the cook is to discover, develop, and deliver umami.
What does umami mean?
Yumminess, deliciousness, savoriness, satisfaction. And umami exists in many forms. That's what I've discovered really is going on with anybody, whether it be a home cook, a restaurant chef, or a caterer of whatever, whether you're professional or amateur. You're looking for something that's yummy and satisfying. Isn't that basically what you're doing with food?
And that's why I'm going to your buttermilk strata with portobello mushrooms and leeks. It speaks for itself. I just don't want to run out of time, but we're talking about eggs and buttermilk, whole milk ricotta cheese, parsley, leeks, extra virgin olive oil, garlic cloves, some thyme leaves, fresh pepper, portobello mushrooms that you slice, dry white wine. This would be a great wine to put in there, this Mekong. And country-style artisanal bread that you cut into cubes and then some grated Parmesan or Grana Padano cheese. And this goes into a baking dish and goes in the oven. It starts on the stovetop, and I have on holidays had something like this. And so a strata is wonderful, but a buttermilk strata, ooh, what a good idea that is, Peter.
Yeah, you're describing an umami bomb. You have umami that's coming from the lactic acid culture in the buttermilk, coming from the portobello mushroom, right, coming from the Parmesan cheese. All of these things conspire together to deliver savory, yummy satisfaction. Here's another example.
Here's the thing. If you say souffle to me, I'm pretty much not going near the stove. I don't know about you, Alex. Are you a baker? I've never asked you this, Alex.
Sort of scary, right?
Yeah, it is.
Afraid it's going to collapse.
Right.
Yes, and I'm afraid I'm not going to beat my egg whites enough. And so I was so intrigued with this recipe from Fresh Food Fast. Peter Burley's on the Food Schmooze with us because his recipe is for a lemon ricotta souffle with blueberries.
Oh, my.
What's so intriguing is ingredients, sugar, he likes cane sugar, eggs, whole eggs I'm talking about, lemon zest, so the outer layer of the lemon that you grate off, whole milk ricotta cheese, and a pint of fresh blueberries. And all you do is put the rack in the lower part of your oven, preheat the oven, butter a pie plate or a baking dish. In a bowl, you just take a whisk and stir together the eggs, the sugar, and lemon zest. Dump in the ricotta, stir it some more, and pour that mixture into your buttered pie plate and bake it for 15 minutes. You top it with blueberries, maybe a little bit of sugar on top, and you serve it warm or chilled. There are no egg whites.
I think I could do it.
I could eat that.
There's no breaking of anything. Okay. How easy. And it puffs up along the edges, and it's custardy. Oh, and you could use raspberries or blackberries. How about that, Peter? That's great.
The impetus for the book was that I was a younger father at the time with kids and had come out of, you know, a pretty intense stretch of restaurant work. And I was always looking for real shortcuts to cooking with genuine ingredients, but to do all sorts of culinary sleight of hand. So that's an example of it. The blueberries are added after about 15 minutes of baking so that they don't pop too soon. So you start the souffle in the oven, and then you pull it out and then add your fruit. And you're using fruit that requires no prep. There's no peeling. There's no cutting. You know, there's none of that. So
thank you.
Throughout the book, there's all these ways in which you start to notice there isn't much prep time.
Right, because you have kids and you can't afford it. I forgot to say, Peter, that at the beginning of your book, you have a lemon walnut hummus with warm pita. I just wanted to mention that it's in the book. Peter, I know that all of us, Chris, Lori, Jonathan, Alex, a lot of us have seen this year on restaurant menus and in, you know how you do the review of the ingredients of the year. It probably would be on that list. I think we're going to find out. They usually do it just before New Year's. Lettuce that people have put on the grill. A lot of people put their grills away just shortly after Labor Day. He's got a recipe for a pan-grilled radicchio salad with honey balsamic glaze.
Yum.
And what that grilling does is add a bit of, whether it's in a pan like Peter does or on the actual grill, there's a little bit of a charry feeling. It always makes a caramelization. And when you have balsamic and honey, that increases the caramelization even more. And so you've got something really good going on. You tell us how you do it, Peter, after I list balsamic vinegar, shallots, a head of radicchio, extra virgin olive oil, tablespoon of honey, some kosher salt and fresh black pepper, some maybe frisée or curly endive, and some fresh squeezed lemon juice. How do you do this?
You want to basically cut the radicchio so that it will lay flat. You know, so we either quarter it or halve it, depending on whether you have treviso radicchio, which is a long oblong shape, or whether you have the round compact radicchio. You want to cut it so that you have some flat edge in wedges or in halves. So you're not shredding this. And then you want to heat your pan hot. You could use a nonstick pan, I indicate here, or not. I mean, a well-seasoned cast iron pan is even better. A griddle will work too, but a cast iron pan is excellent for this. Put the radicchio cut side down in the pan and start cooking it until it starts to brown. You want that browning because that's what's going to mitigate some of the bitterness of the radicchio and give a smoky flavor. So, and then you're going to mix up a little marinade. You know, mix your oil with your honey, your vinegar, your shallots, and season with some salt and pepper. And then just pour the vinaigrette over the radicchio in the pan and cook for another minute, and it's done. I love doing dry, seared vegetables in pans. I do this a lot. Like, I do taco fillings where I'll just take a griddle and I'll slice onions into rings and sear them black, you know, blacken them a little bit. I'll take steamed or blanched root vegetable so that they have a little bit of time to soften, maybe for 3 or 4 minutes. And then I throw them onto a dry, hot griddle. Grilling inside without a grill is an excellent way of getting some smoky, charred flavor into your food.
Alex Provence, your family is from Spain. Your mother grew up in Spain, and you go there all the time. Does this sound familiar to you? This
is sort of a la plancha, right?
Yes, a la plancha.
Yes. A la plancha.
That's what it is.
They do shrimp a la plancha. And it gets that exactly right, that smokiness, a little bit of char.
A la plancha means on the plank or on the...
It's a hot griddle.
Hot griddle.
A big iron griddle.
Okay. So that's Alex Provence, and we are with Peter Burley, who is author of Fresh Food Fast. There's a pumpkin pear fennel soup in this book, but I want to go right to this because it's one of my favorite things to eat. This is made at a place that I know you'll know, Peter, on the east end of Long Island in both East Hampton and in Amagansett, a place called Mary's Marvelous. We've talked about her Corova chocolate cookies that are the best cookies in a package I've ever had in my life. Well, she also makes, if you actually go in there, these arepas. You use a corn flour, masa harina, and a cheese, and you fry these up, and they are so incredible. You eat them warm. They're one of the best things I've ever had for breakfast or any meal in my life. So here is, you have a recipe. I was excited to see this. So cups of masa harina. We're going to find out from you what that is. You can use Gouda or Monterey Jack cheese, a little salt and pepper, a neutral frying oil, a little garnish of sour cream if you want, maybe some fresh cilantro, a sprig of that. This gets baked in the oven also. So in a bowl, you combine the masa harina, which is?
Masa harina is an instant corn flour that's the base of all tortillas, arepas, gorditas. The dried corn flour that you can buy at any Latin market.
So any Latin grocery store. And I said cheese and salt and, you know, fresh cilantro. And how does it come together quickly?
You add water, stir, and it forms an instant dough. Then you can shape that dough, you can stuff the dough, you can pan fry, you can bake. It's kind of an instant food.
And you can put things in it besides cheese. It is so crazy delicious.
It's amazing.
You have a recipe for chipotle roasted potatoes. Now, there is something I would like with my Thanksgiving dinner. You have a tomato goat cheese strata, another strata for people who love to do something fun on Sunday. And for fruit lovers, a broiled pineapple with honey, ginger, and lime. So people who want to have fruit for dessert, This is a wonderful, wonderful thing. Peter, thank you so much for being on the Food Schmooze Party. It's good to talk with you on the east end of Long Island.
Thank you very much, Faith.
Peter Burley, B-E-R-L-E-Y. He is author of Fresh Food Fast in Paperback, vegetable-based dishes for people who want to get more vegetables on the plate or might be vegetarian. Thank you, Alex Province of Eater and Goodman, wine distributors, and to the gang here on the show. The Food Schmooze on WNPR airs Wednesdays at 3 and 9 p.m., Saturdays at noon. We're online anytime. Find the recipes, food products, restaurants, value wines, and easy cocktails we feature at WNPR.org. Click on programs for the Faith Middleton Show on WNPR.org. Here's to pleasure, my friends, and remember, never eat more than you can lift. In New Haven, I'm Faith Middleton.
Everybody eats when they come to mind.